Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will chat with Chuck Culpepper about the World Cup and his thoughts on Belgium thrashing Team USA. We'll also talk to Buster Olney about baseball and potatoes, probably mostly about potatoes. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know, 10 miles away, right there, you know, on the...
In Queens, though.
On the Cross Island.
Yeah, on Queens.
Well, it's always unclear to me. Is Elmont in Queens or is it in Nassau County?
Half,
kind of half and half, I think.
Half of the track is in Elmont, Long Island, which is in Nassau County, and half of the track is in Queens.
Right.
Or was, in the old track.
So we were that far. But it did make me think about, like, Chick Anderson, and I just said he's eating like a tremendous machine.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I can't tell you how many emails and texts I've gotten praising Jeremy Shapps'
just the
appearance. We have him annually, and people love him, and I love him. So we're happy with that. For those people who watched PTI yesterday, and you had to find it because we were bumped off ESPN to ESPN2, and justifiably, because the Djokovic match was still going on in its fifth hour yesterday, a five-set match with, I think, three different tiebreakers. Tiebreaker at the end, 10-point tiebreaker that Djokovic won. So if you couldn't find PTI, you may have missed this. But question came to me at the end of the show, how do you think Paul Skeens is going to do tonight? And I said, well, I think he'll get his velocity back up because his velocity's been down lately. I think he'll go six innings, two earned, eight Ks. Six innings, two earned, four Ks.
Well,
I was close.
It helps to get spotted four runs in the first.
Right. I was close on that. Yeah, the O'Hearn drove in 10 runs last night.
It was remarkable.
Yeah,
they got
10
four
runs.
In the first, another
Wait,
three
and
in the third.
That's not the most
and
amazing thing
six.
In baseball. His 10 runs batted in, a guy I never heard of. There's a guy named Tolbert on Kansas City who had 12 consecutive hits.
Oh, yeah.
No walks, no errors, no.
Hits.
12 consecutive hits. That's unbelievable. That's actually unbelievable.
So hit it.
That's that's actually unbelievable.
What was
that's
the line
coaching.
You said? What did you say for Skeens?
I said six innings, two earned, eight Ks. And he had six innings, two earned, four Ks.
Wow. Well done.
Are you listening to the show?
I was just looking up. I was just.
Did you think I made this up?
We just like
surprise
to check
you could fit that baseball preview with all that soccer talk.
I'll get to soccer, sure. And for those of you expecting me to talk about the Nats lose. It's a dull game. I don't, you know.
A slow game.
Yeah, I didn't care for the game one way or the other. I thought they left Alvarez in much too long. I didn't know what they were doing. And, you know,
they're just trying to get to the break at this point.
Yes, it's discouraging. Are they under 500 now or are they at 500?
They're still a game over.
Still a game over. It's discouraging to look at the crowd when Houston is no draw at all. Mm. There's nobody there. You know, Houston, a team that had won, not only had they won World Series, getting
fair,
involved
the
in the scandal, and Nats beat them in the World Series.
The entire area feels pretty empty in middle of July right now.
Yeah, it really does. So, okay. So
you see this with traffic, except if you're on Wisconsin Avenue driving through downtown Bethesda.
Right.
Watch out for the bus lanes.
What is going on?
Well, they're shutting down certain stops on the Red Line. So you've seen them putting up the no parking signs for the last couple weeks. And I guess at the start of July, they've implemented this where if you get out at Friendship Heights on the Metro train, you get out and you take a bus that'll take you up the pike.
So they're only going north? They're not going south?
Well, they're
going
to go south as well, but I'm saying that, you know.
So they're dedicated bus lanes now? And
dedicated bus lanes.
Cars can't go. Are they also still dedicated bicycle lanes?
That has to stop. Are outside of, if you're outside of the medical buildings, they are honking at you to get out of there.
Yeah.
The Barlow building?
Oh, I would imagine that. I mean, those are
all the drop-offs.
Those are high-density buildings.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, what was the biggest news?
You didn't
say
it for the Dylan Cruz pinch hit at bat? Bases
no,
loaded.
I noticed.
The unluckiest hitter, apparently, with all the metrics about hard hit balls.
He is the unluckiest hitter?
I think he's up there. It's the storyline you always hear.
So what happened?
Strikes out swinging.
Oh, well, then he didn't hit the ball hard.
Yeah.
He didn't hit the ball at all if he struck out. I noticed early on that C.J. Abrams was the DH last night.
C.J.
And they had,
Abrams.
What's his name? They had somebody I can't stand at shortstop. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was either Tania or Vivas, and I just don't. I'm not fans of theirs on any level.
No,
but I did notice that that the outfield was young and
Nunez
wild.
Nunez at short.
So it was Nunez at short. Yeah. Okay. But was Vivas was at third or was he at first?
He was
first?
At second. Me was at third.
Yeah.
Who's on first?
Yeah, who's on first? What's on second? I don't know.
We're at that point of the summer.
Anyways, I didn't pay much attention to that game. I paid attention yesterday to, and I'm not going to try to pretend I'm a soccer person. I'm not a soccer person. I'm glad we're out so we can stop talking about soccer at great length, I hope, on the PTI show. But I'm not sure that's the case because, you know, if 20 million people watch these games without the United States, you have to talk about them. I appreciate the position that I'm in. But I did watch the Argentina-Egypt game. And when I say I watched, I mean...
It's on in the background?
I looked at it for about 5 minutes in the first half and realized that Egypt was up 2-0 and thought, whoa, what if Egypt beats Argentina?
That's huge.
Then they were up 2-0 in the second half.
And then there was a phone call that was made.
Deep into the second half, they're up 2-0. Now, you've already lost Brazil, and now you're going to lose Argentina. There's only 8 countries all time that have won the World Cup, and they are 2 of them. And they're about to go out. They're the strongest South American countries. And then in a 12-minute span, I don't know how this is possible, Argentina scored 3 goals. And Egypt has accused FIFA of fixing the game?
The coach went wild.
The coach went wild.
Well, the players went wild, too.
Fixing the game for Argentina. What do they say about the fact that Argentina scored these goals?
Sure, you were missing, before you got to that second goal, there was another second goal that got taken away on review for a play that happened at the far end of the field that I don't think should have gone to review. So their issue was the tying goal, under the same rules that they applied to the Egypt goal, should have at least been looked at. And if FIFA wanted to have a clean game, at least say, we're putting it up for you to see. It is clear by this rule, the same way that they do with the offsides, where you never actually know where the ball is when they're showing you the line.
Right.
But at least then they have some, you know, they have something to stand on. So their whole players went wild. It seems like there was a complete momentum shift in the second, and there are some substitutions that just made it look like it wasn't a question of if, but how quickly Argentina would win.
I will say
this. And
you're
seeing this all tournament. Once you get to stoppage time, all of a sudden you're playing for goals.
Yeah, and people try to score.
Quickly. Yeah.
And people try to score. So I have 2 things to say. One is you know, very unremarkable, I guess. I mean, these goals, they went in.
Yes.
They went in. I mean, Argentina, there was a period of time when it appeared that Egypt had 50 people on the field all lined up in front of their own goal. Frank Isoli yesterday called this packing the bus.
That's right.
It is a term, a soccer term, apparently. I had never heard it before, where it looked like all they're trying to do is play defense. And yet, 2 of those times, Argentina scored. This is not my biggest issue. My biggest issue, and this is... maybe nobody else cares about this. When they go into extra time or stoppage time, whatever they call that thing, where it's up on the screen and it says +5, yeah, +7, +10, whatever it says, to tell you how much time is left beyond when time expired. Time expires at 90 minutes, and then there's more time.
Right.
There's more time because they don't stop during the game, even when people lay on the ground for 5 minutes. They don't stop. Okay. That's the way you want to do it. Okay. But nobody, not even the coaches, know how much time is actually left.
That's right.
I mean, if you don't want to put a big clock up for people like me, okay. If this is your convention and this is how you do it, fine. But they don't even let the coaches know.
Now, what I do find amazing is when you're watching it, you can actually feel the rhythm of it and go, I know, we see the +7 and go, I know, okay, they're going to let this team get one last possession. If anything doesn't materialize, they're going to blow it fine.
It really feels like the fix is in.
Yeah.
It really does.
That to me does not feel like the fix because you're trying to follow the rhythm of the game. But
yeah, but they always give them, it's sort of like, all right, we'll see what happens with this last
And if you don't
thrust.
Get this one, that's it. Game's over.
Right, that's how it feels.
I always do like at the end, though, you're trying to predict, like, is this going to be a 7? They never have it like on a clean, round number.
This is not how we play sports. Not in this country. It's not.
But that's why you like the Argentinian goals where you see, like, okay, I see the pass, I see it go in, I saw the play
develop.
And
Messi scored a goal.
Did you do you want to hear the exact quote from the Egyptian coach?
Yeah, sure.
Perhaps they wanted to keep the world champion in the competition. Perhaps they wanted Messi to stay in the running. In football, there are sometimes external factors that go beyond the technical aspects. The world champions receive the support at every level.
Okay.
Is he going to watch the rest of the tournament? I think that was the last part
of the quote. He's probably right. Huh? I mean, I would. Who knows?
Well, it's not like FIFA's above.
FIFA's is just...
It's with the IOC, it's the most
corrupt. Layers and layers of corruption for 100 years. Layers and layers of corruption. You can't get through the corruption.
No, you can't.
You can't drill through the corruption. There's so much corruption. I also watched a bunch of Wimbledon yesterday. I watched Coco Gauff beat Jessica Pegula, which is totally predictable. Jessica Pegula has once gotten to a major final and lost, but most of the time goes out in the round of eight or something like that, round of eight, round of four. And Coco Gauff can win this thing. She's a very good player. She's now reached the semifinals in all four different majors. That's a rarity.
At 22.
Yeah, that's a rarity. I watched Naomi Osaka fold against Muhova. Muhova. She's folded. In each, she got to crunch time in both sets and went down the drain. She got to a tiebreaker in the first set and was down 5-1. Not going to recover from that.
And then it was like 4-all in the second?
4-all. She got broken and then she lost love.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, everybody was, Wilbon loves Osaka, but it's not her surface.
No, I think that's the best she's done.
It is the best she's done, getting into the quarters. I watched Sinner beat some guy. I don't know who the guy was.
I think it's pronounced Lehechka, but it looks like Leheka. So
Bill
I was thinking it's Bill. I always think it's Bill out there. Yeah.
So you know, and Sinner's supposed to do that.
Yes.
Sinner's the number one seed. He's supposed to get to the semis. But here's who Sinner's going to play in the semis. He's going to play Novak Djokovic. Now, people who listen to the show know I don't like Novak Djokovic, but I have enormous respect for what he has done as a tennis player. He's one major away from being undeniably the GOAT. I mean, I don't know how you say no, because he'd have 26 majors, more than anybody ever, if he wins this thing at 39 years old. And he played a Canadian kid who was the number three ranked kid. Can you pronounce his name, Felix?
Oje Aliassime. That's right.
It's a great match.
Call him FAA.
It was a fabulous match.
Yeah, it was.
And Djokovic didn't wilt in the heat. I mean, in the first set, he brought the doctor out because his calf or something was bothering him. But he played four more sets without doing that. And he rose to it. He won it. He won a 10-point tiebreak and got out early. Like, it was at one point was up like 8-3 or 8-4 or something like that. In all the clutch moments that he had to perform, he performed. This is undeniable. And Alcaraz is not in the field. If he gets past Sinner, he's going to win. Now, that's a tough match. That's a very tough match. Sinner is number one. He's number one for a reason. No, he is the best player. He or Alcaraz, they are the best players in the world. Djokovic is ranked seventh at the moment and beat the number three yesterday. Beat the number three. Djokovic never ranked seven in the last 20 years. He hasn't been ranked seven.
Oh.
Right? I like his chances.
And I
do.
Did Sinner win this? I think he won Wimbledon last year, didn't he?
Maybe.
Defending champ?
Maybe. I mean, Sinner and Alcaraz win everything. Everything they're entered in, they win. Other people don't
Alcaraz
win.
Alcaraz hasn't played in a while, but... Alcaraz hasn't played in a while.
No, since Australia.
He missed the French, and he's missed Wimbledon, and maybe he'll play in the U.S. Open, maybe not.
Hopefully.
You know, when you sit out this long, maybe you just like eating. You know, maybe you don't want to play anymore. So, can you bring me another pint of that? You know, another pint of ice cream? Because I like that. Anyway,
Jess Pegula has committed to the DC Open at the end of the month, so we can take you with the boys to go watch her play.
Good. Have I said this publicly? I think I may have said this publicly. I know I've said it privately. I have tremendous admiration for Jessica Pegula, and I'll tell you why. She comes from a family of extraordinarily rich people who own the Buffalo Bills and they own the Buffalo Sabres. And she doesn't have to do this. And she works as hard as anybody.
Oh, yeah.
She's out there working all the time. She's, you know, she doesn't... A lot of people in that position wouldn't do it. And she's out there battling all the time. So I admire Jessica Pegula. I just don't think she hasn't shown greatness yet.
No, not yet.
You know, see if she does. Anyway.
And we have the final round of the U.S. Adaptive Open later
this
morning.
You went over there.
Yeah, took Boosie to Woodmont South. He got to walk the entire course. And the highlight for me is on our very first hole, so we walk in on the 13th, there was a player that went viral about a year ago, Chazzy Bowker.
Oh, Boker. Alan knows him.
He had a hole in one in a practice round. And I see this great approach from what felt like 180, 190 out to a back pin on that hole. Bootsy's applauding him. He comes by, looks at the kid, throws him a golf ball. One hops. I reach out, catch it. The boy is beaming. I take a photo of him with Chazzy in the background. He's playing golf with Alan this week.
Okay.
And Ronnie.
Okay. Right, so, yes. So, now you need to hear this story that Alan told me. Alan is talking to Chazzy. Now, Chazzy is 4'4".
Yes, he's in the short stature category, yes, where he's tied for first in that category. Okay. Overall, he's a couple off the big lead.
Alan says to him, you know, we give putts at some point. You know, we got to establish a boundary inside of which we give putts. And he says, Chazzy said, inside Chazzy. And he lays down and he says, inside of Chazzy, that's a given putt. So, you know, Alan loves him.
It's a good marker.
Alan loves him. So that's, you know, if you get a chance to go, it's an uplifting circumstance. Yeah. An uplifting circumstance. We will take a break. Chuck Culpepper. We're going to talk about soccer. Chuck's going to talk about soccer. I'm going to ask some soccer questions. Chuck's going to talk about soccer. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nothing goes as planned.
This is Andrew Bell. We played Andrew Bell last week, and we had nothing to say about Andrew Bell. And as Andrew Bell writes, well, for a minute there, I really thought Michael was going to get that printer working. So we didn't have that. But he writes, regardless, it was still fun to hear the music on the show, so thank you. And in case you want to try again, here are a few more songs you're welcome to use. This is called In My Veins. This is Andrew Bell. We're going to play him twice today. He says, as I tried to say before, thank you for the many years of laughs and entertainment as I've traveled around the country for work. This is his work. Again, this is In My Veins, Andrew Bell, who's very, very good. Plays in Chuck Culpepper, who was hit the jackpot by hanging around Cape Verde.
Oh, yeah.
And Cape Verde almost beat, who'd they almost beat? Argentina, right?
That's right.
So, like, that would have been, given the fact of how Argentina beat Egypt yesterday with 3 goals in, I don't know, 45 seconds, you know, to knock out Argentina would have been a huge deal. So we'll get to all of that. But, I mean, I'm using your soccer expertise because I have none. And we'll start with the obvious question for our audience. Are you surprised that Belgium beat the United States, or are you surprised with the ease Belgium beat the United States?
I think it's the latter of the two. I'm surprised that it wasn't a bit more competitive and that it was looked like it did from the first seconds.
Yeah.
And made me think of this old interview I did with a former Premier League player, but an American one. One of the Americans who's played in England named Jay Demerit, who played for a club, Watford, that went from the second tier in England up to the top, and it was about almost 20 years ago. And I asked him one time, what's the difference between the two? And he said, when you're playing in the second division, you see someone coming at you, and you have the thought, he's coming at me. And when you play in the top division, by the time you finish the thought, he's already atop you. So I've always thought about that. I thought that was a great way to describe it, what it feels like. And to me, that's how that match looked. Belgium looked faster and, you know, keener and more tactical, more ready, more everything. It just looked like, okay, those were great wins over Paraguay and Australia, Bosnia. But it looked like what I had been curious about before the match was, will this be a step up in quality? And I kind of thought it wouldn't necessarily, based on Belgium not looking all that dazzling in previous matches, but it did. It just looked like, oh, okay, we're in the top league now.
See, I don't know how this works, the Fallarin-Balogun thing. I don't know how it works, but it does seem to me that it is possible that so angered the Belgian team that it gave them a common purpose beyond what they normally would have. I don't know that it had any effect on the American team, but it might have had an effect on the Belgian team, because afterwards they tweeted out, what was it, overturn this or something like that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's absolutely right. I agree, you know, wholeheartedly with that. That there's a reason that coaches like, let's just think of great coaches we've experienced, like, say, Nick Saban, don't want any outside distractions, you know, and it's not being control freaks about it, I don't think, although maybe that's part of it, but it's about, you know, not lending any kind of particular focus to the other side, something that they might, that might make them concentrate in a better way, or might make them, you know, more, say, attentive to detail that needs to be done to play like Belgium did. And I think, I mean, I guess it's pretty clear from the dancing in the locker room and everything afterward that that it did give them something.
So I guess for me, I mean, I look at this like a, you know, a veteran sports writer. Like, for me, it's, well, was the red card deserved? I mean, forgetting who makes phone calls for a second, if you possibly can forget that, but forgetting how high up the ladder it goes, did the guy deserve a red card? If he did, he's out. If he didn't, I'm fine with him going back in. What are your thoughts on that?
This is where I listen to people who have followed since they're, you know, since they were single digit aged and didn't start loving the sport at, say, 30, like I did.
Yeah.
And everyone says, yes, it's a red card. Oh, I kind of don't want it to be, because I look at it and I think I don't see harm there. I see sort of potential harm, and I guess that's why it's the rule or whatever. But yes, and then, you know, you bring in the factor of the slow-mo. The slow-mo video that you watch, which makes it look worse, which
always
did not used to be part, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think I kind of don't want it to be a red card. I don't think it should be, but everybody I know who, you know, who has watched the sport forever says, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's part of the deal. But in a way, I was kind of glad that he was back, because I just didn't think he did a horrible thing.
Do you find it ironic, or is there something more to it than just irony, that all three host countries got bounced in the same round and it appeared that they'd gotten easy draws in group to get them to that round? Am I overstating this?
So in the cases of the U.S. and Canada, it kind of looked like they got to the round where that fit, you know, and maybe Canada even a little bit beyond, but In the case of Mexico, it's just this, I mean, there have been so many great matches in this tournament that it's hard to finish talking about one before another one pops up. And a lot of great 3-2 matches, and the England-Mexico match in Mexico City was one of those. And, you know, England was down to 10 men for a long time there.
Yeah, 40 minutes.
Just a nerve-wracking thing. And so I do think Mexico, possibly, you know, Mexico has its long history of losing in the round of 16. It's happened over and over and over and over again through the last, say, 30 years. I do think, though, I could have seen them maybe as a quarterfinalist, you know, a legit quarterfinalist. So, but with the U.S. and Canada, I kind of think, just from how it looked, Canada against Morocco and the U.S. against Belgium, both losing by 3 goals, it just kind of looked like, okay, that's where they landed, because that's where they should have landed.
I mean, as an old sports writer, as a columnist, you always say, what's the column here? Most of the time, I usually think that the losing locker room is the column.
Yeah.
But in the case of Mexico, England, I would have gone winning locker room, because that, the odds on them winning that, when they walked in there, they're at 7,500 feet in altitude, which cannot be approximated anywhere in England. They have 3 days to acclimate. They're at a stadium where the other team has played like 89 games and lost twice. Everything is against them, and they lose a guy. And the fact that they won that, to me, you the column is the winning locker room. That's what I think. What do you think?
Yes, and it was It was what England fans have looked for a long time. It had this quality about it of, I guess, some people say courage is too strong a word, but I think there was some courage in there. It had some, had this, so people have seen England for a long time as, okay, there's this build up, this grand national expectation before all these World Cups, and then there's kind of this lukewarm aspect to them, and sort of where's the fight like that? Well, that was, I'm trying to think of anybody in the whole field who, I'm sure I can come up with someone who showed more fight than that. And that was really inspiring. And, it, yeah. You know, I was thinking about how it could unleash a lot of purple copy into English publications, sure. You know, and that all of it would be warranted.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Let me go local again. Wonder Boy, Christian Pulisic, you know, famous for having Hershey candies designed in his honor, gave us nothing. No goals, zero goals. What do we make of that?
I do think it's kind of, I think we always tend to jump ahead of what's been established. Actually, it kind of drove me nuts the way the U.S. beat Paraguay and Australia, and then we're already talking about winning the whole thing when there's so many layers left, so many hard, hard tiers to go. And I sort of think there's a parallel there a bit with him, which is where we, you know, we're so excited about someone and we have this irrational exuberance that hasn't been fulfilled yet. And that's where we are with this too. I think about irrational exuberance in both cases sometimes, and it's fun. I guess I'd rather feel exuberant even if it's irrational than to feel not exuberant. So there's that element to it, but it's just, we sort of jump ahead of what the reality is as a culture, because it's, we love our hype.
Yeah. The coach, Mauricio Pochettino, I guess they're, you know, everyone wonders, will he stay? Will the United States want him? It's 4 more years till this thing happens again. It's a tremendous amount of time. Do you think this guy's going to stay here and coach this team for 4 more years?
I never go to gambling windows. I don't like betting. I have other vices, but if I would say no, in this case, I would say there would be some lure in Europe that will bring him back there. But it would be great. I just think there is something about him that I think would be wonderful to have around. And, you know, couldn't wish for the duration of, say, the French manager, but it's there's something about him that was maybe different from all his, or a lot of his predecessors. I don't want to leave out Bruce Arena, who in his first run did an extraordinary job getting the U.S. to the 0-2 quarterfinal. So, but this man brought something to it that was really compelling and really, the way he sort of became an American. In a lot of ways.
Well, he sang Take Me Home Country Roads.
Right.
I mean, if you
right.
can do that from Argentina, you can do anything, you know. Although maybe, well, who knows? It just seems like a long time. The soccer poets are out there saying there's going to be a boom. I've heard this for 50 years, since Pelé got to this country. There's going to be a boom. And by next Tuesday, we're going to be the best country in the world. We're never the best country in the world. We always go out in the same spot. We always go out in the round of 16. It's who we are. It's not our game. The NFL's our game. Let's see Belgium beat us in the NFL. Not going to do that. But do you see a boom? Do you see a legitimate boom? Because I never do.
Oh, I. Yes is my first answer that this time, because it was so loud and so enthralling for a while that I could see kids going out to the, you know, outdoors to the street in front of them in the heat and practicing and so on. And then you run into this thought of, well, everyone is down now on our youth leagues and how they function and the contours of them and the money involved in them. And is this the way to do it? And apparently it's not. And so a boom in interest, yes. A boom in quality, I'd say no at this point.
Because it's sometime, Billy is out there and says, why can't I use my hands? I can use my hands in the other sports. I want to use my hands. But I'm that guy.
You know. We used to be the land of goalkeepers, you know, that was our, because of that. You know?
Yeah.
And then now we have this goalkeeping error that you just feel, my heart shattered for the guy. So,
is there a team that you think is going to win this?
I do. I've thought France all along.
Yeah.
I think their quarterfinal with Morocco is very scary, very, very scary. But I think part of it is they play a form of the sport that's really beautiful, and I would like to see that prevail. So I've sort of thought France all along, and I've thought if they get into a match with Argentina, then they'll maybe have that thing that Belgium had against the U.S. because they lost to them the last time.
And that would give you Mbappe and Messi. Somebody said to me the other day, in just yesterday, actually, in great praise of Messi, said he's Tom Brady. He's Tom Brady. I mean, and that there's no higher compliment for an aging athlete than to be compared to Tom Brady, right?
I think there's a lot in that, too, in terms of the entire approach to the sport as well. You know, I think Mbappe's, I would place him pretty, he's a lot younger, so we don't know yet, but pretty close to that as well in terms of the sort of dedication and the lack of, you know, a whole lot of extra noise around them.
It gives me great joy when you're on this show. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you.
It gives me great joy to be on. Thank you so much, Tony.
Chuck Culpepper, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll go to Buster Olney. We can talk to him about
the flowering potatoes.
The flowering potatoes, and talk to him about baseball when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Woe is me. This is Andrew Bell one more time. Faithless you. This is called The Ladder. Michael, if people who are independent artists like Andrew Bell want to send in their original music to play on the show, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. This sounds like it could be the captain's bedtime song.
It's a lovely song.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Andrew Bell plays in Buster Olney, and, you know, we're going to get to baseball, but we have to start with potatoes. So in the last week, Washington had 4 days over 100, and at least twice a day I went out there to water the potatoes, not knowing if I have to water potatoes or not, not having any idea, but doing it, treating them like other plants. I lost many of my tomatoes. I lost them to the heat, even with all of this watering. But when you see—
Not the plants, just the fruit.
Just the fruit, yeah, not the plants. So, because I watered it a lot. But when you see the stalks of the potatoes coming out of the bags, and they're 2 feet high at least with flowers, I worried that we hadn't planted potatoes. But we had just planted flowers. But you want to reassure me, yes?
Yeah, it's 100%. I think all these signs are great. You know, the fact that you're treating them like your children,
yes. That's
great.
Yes, I wish.
Going out and watching them over them every day. You know, I'm sure that if they could text, you'd be texting them,
yes. You
know, on a regular basis saying, how are you doing? So I get that. And I will say, and I mentioned this to you before we did a PTI segment last week, that, you know, I'm making a phone call because I'm trying to find out information about the Phillies, the Phillies and how they're progressing. And I'm talking with a member of their front office. And the first question is, how's your crop doing?
It's great.
Because of my conversations with you.
Yeah, so
and this
great.
Person relates all that. And so I get the feeling, and I grew up on a farm, but I can't pretend that like I have super deep knowledge on it. But I know you and I are pretending like we do, and that's really great.
Hope it works. All right. We're halfway through the baseball season. I was going to ask you a lot of halfway questions. But two things happened yesterday that I think take precedence. One is, in the history of baseball, setting up Shohei Ohtani for where he is ranked. He hit his 300th home run yesterday. Dodgers lost the game, but he hit his 300th home run. But more amazing to me is somebody named Tolbert, who I don't know at all, on Kansas City, who had 12 straight hits. I couldn't even believe that the record was 12. I couldn't believe that.
No, and I don't think anyone does. In fact, I saw, and I wish I could give credit, but it was some website this morning on social media, and it posts that given his history as a utility player, he's been a utility player and a pinch runner. For him, based on his history, the chances for him to come up with a streak like that are something like 1 in 3.5 million. You know, this is not a top prospect coming up and just raking.
Yeah.
This is someone who's got an opportunity to play and, you know, in a classic style. His 12th hit last night was an infield single. And you know, you could see in the grin that he has that he understands that, you know, this is like winning the lottery over and over and over again. So pretty cool in a sport that's so filled with failure that you get a player and who gets an opportunity like that.
So three of his hits last night were infield hits. Three of them.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's right. Not like he's banging home. It's not Kyle Schwarber sitting there
right.
Like a coiled snake. It's not that. But 12 in a row, it's hard to imagine because, I mean, that eliminates the possibility of an error, eliminates the possibility of a walk, eliminates the possibility of a strike. All these things that happen to everybody did not happen to him.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, it's one of the great things about baseball. My time covering the sport is you get players who are, you know, sort of at the fringe of the game and there, and they have those moments. When I was covering the Orioles back in the 90s, they had they acquired a third baseman named Jeff Manto, who I think hit 5 homers over the course of 2 days. You know, his dad was a judge in the Philadelphia area. Ooh. We got to, you know, learn something about it. And he knew it. Like, just talking with him on a daily basis, I would see him as a coach for years after, bump into him, and we'd talk about how cool that was that he had that opportunity. I think that's how everyone's feeling about Tyler Tolbert today.
Let's go to Ohtani. 300 home runs before the end of his 9th season is a rarefied air for Ohtani, and everything Ohtani does, everything he does indicates that I don't want to say the best baseball player of all time, but he certainly may end up as the most impactful baseball player of all time. Yes?
I'll say the best baseball okay. player of all time because he's doing these things. He's pitching great, and he's an elite hitter at the same time. And Babe Ruth never really did that. That's the guy he's always compared to. I've been thinking about this because he's been dealing with nagging injuries this year. You know, he's had this bicep issue where in his last start as a pitcher, so that when he was taking swings, he didn't feel completely comfortable, and so they pinch hit for him late in that game, and then he sat out the next day. And Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, said that's gone away. It's just something that he's had a couple times. He's maintaining that. He's had this issue with some soreness in his left knee, which is a big deal because as a pitcher, that's your land leg as a right-handed pitcher. And all of it is a reminder to me that this is all fleeting, right?
Yeah.
And that we should enjoy this. This is getting to watch, you know, Babe Ruth in 1927. This is getting to watch Ted Williams in 1941. Mickey Mantle, 1956. This is a great player at his absolute peak. And it's not going to last. 32 years old, you do wonder if in, 3-4 years he'll make a decision, as Ruth did, to go to being a full-time hitter. But right now, man, is it fun.
Yeah. What would you have done? How do you feel about the Marlins manager taking the kid out with 7 innings of a perfect, not a no-hitter now, a perfect game? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, as I was watching it, I was thinking there's no chance that he's going to get a chance to get to the end of the game because they don't. They don't do that anymore. They don't go off script anymore. Teams don't, they have their script before the game and they stick to it. And he said that before that game, they talked about Perez having 90-plus pitches. He gets the 92 after 7, and then they pull the plug. The days of the rogue manager, the powerful manager, giving the pitcher a chance to do something special, make history, throw 130 pitches the way Johan Santana did and getting the Mets' first no-hitter, those days are gone. Everything is top-down. And look, and the Marlins are a great example that they're even calling pitches from the dugout. And that is a radical change, and they're having success doing it. So I thought there was no chance that, that he was going to be able to finish that game. It really is pining for, him to go, 120 pitches, 130 pitches. That's like wishing for, 5-cent milk. It just doesn't happen anymore.
I mean, I was, you know, I thought it was an awful decision. But by the same token, there are two teams in baseball, the White Sox and the Marlins, where I say, wow, that it just seems like they're doing something right. So maybe I ought to shut my yap about this. You know, that's how I felt.
Yeah, but I think you and I agree with you. Like, I want the kid to have an opportunity. I think it's a special thing. You know, I remember once talking with Billy Beane about the pitch counts, and you know, it was suggested in a meeting with the A's that, hey, we're going to restrict this guy to 180 innings. And his answer was, well, what's the science behind that? Why is it 181, not 181 innings? Why is his number same as that other guy's number? You know, I get it that they're looking to protect these guys, but I don't think there's an exact science. And you can't tell me that he couldn't extend to 110 pitches to make it happen, but it just doesn't happen anymore.
Everybody talks about the Mets and how the Mets are a disappointment. They spend all this money and they're no good. And that's all true. The Padres spend a lot of money. The Padres have hitters. They have pitchers. The Padres are, I think, right at 500. They're way behind the Dodgers. Do you have an explanation for them? Is their manager in trouble?
No. Craig Stammen, of course, in his rookie year as a manager.
Used to pitch here.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. And I mean, I say that. They've had a lot of managerial turnover with A.J. Breller, general manager out there. So maybe they could change, but I don't think that's anyone believes that's the reason. The fact is, you know, when Peter Seidler was the owner there, he built what has been an amazing atmosphere in San Diego, where now they're drawing over 3 million people, where they consistently are, you know, the number two drawing team in baseball, which is just shocking for a small market team to get to that point. But there was a Faustian bargain in building that, and that is they invested a lot of money in older players and guaranteed, you know, contracts to guys like Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts, who, and folks around baseball at the time they did those deals was like, man, at the back end of those, it could get a little bit ugly. And we thought going into the year, you know, the Padres had the best bullpen in baseball.
Yes, yes.
But they also, because of their, you know, financial obligations, some of those older players, they didn't have a deep rotation. They didn't necessarily have a deep lineup. And it's all kind of fragmented in part because not only the investment in the older guys, but Jackson Merrill, who, you know, from your area, who was a number one pick, was tremendous as a rookie, and he's kind of fallen off. So it's going to be an interesting decision to see where the Padres, what they're going to do before the trade deadline. Preller usually goes big one way or the other. And if you were to put Mason Miller out in the trade market, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it occurs to me that they are having a bad year, but not as bad as Seattle and Toronto are having. Seattle and Toronto look like they were built for the long haul. What happened to them?
Yeah, and I think Seattle remains a sleeping giant in the American League this year. You know, they're a team to watch. The Blue Jays are really hanging on the fringe of competing. The shocking thing there, and I think if you were to draw up a list of, you know, the 10 most surprising things in baseball this year, the fact that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has half the home runs this season, more than half the season has been played, half the home runs than he hit last October when he dominated. When, you know, I wrote a long piece at the outset of the season quoting Dave Roberts and Andrew Friedman, who run the Dodgers, other guys in the Dodgers, talking about how great Vladdy was and the expectation within the sport that this was going to be a year in which he can compete for the MVP race. To see him be among, you know, the lowest producing first baseman in baseball is a shock. But I think Seattle's going to find their way out of it. They have a lot of talent on that roster. I think they were, you know, people aren't going to complain about this stuff out loud with teams, but there are a number of teams who felt like they were affected by the WBC because of the different preparation that's put in with those teams. Mm-hmm. And they had a bunch of WBC guys. And I think the best days are ahead for the Mariners.
Let me just get back to Vlad Guerrero Jr. for a second. Do I have this correct? He walked away from the All-Star game. Like he was voted on and said no, right?
That's right. And there are times, I must say, that when, you know, veteran players, you know, turn down the opportunity to go to the All-Star game. You know, well, I have to take out the garbage.
Right.
I need to wash my hair. Those type of excuses that sometimes you hear. I think in this case, it's actually Vladdy's respect for the game that he understands that, you know, he's there because of the fan vote based on what he did last October and in past seasons. And I think it was a sign of respect to the game and other first basemen in the American League saying, you know what, I haven't earned it. I'm going to sit out. I'm going to tend to my back, which he's had some soreness this year, and I'm not going to play.
I agree.
This is a case where I get it.
I agree with that. And one last thing, a first half kind of question. First half MVPs in your mind. I had written down Caminero and Shohei.
Yeah, or Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros, mm-hmm. who I remember Dusty Baker when a few years ago, in Dusty's last year's manager, Alvarez missed a few games at the end of spring training, and I said, you're going to send him down, minor league rehab assignment? And Dusty looked at me like I was crazy and said, no, that guy's, his swing is such that he's going to be 80 years old and he's going to wake up from a nap and you can send him out and he's going to hit a line drive someplace. His swing is so simple and so great. He's having a phenomenal season. Junior Caminero, you know, I had Albert Pujols on my podcast earlier this year, and Pujols said to me that when Aaron Judge moves on into retirement, Caminero is going to be the next Aaron Judge.
Wow.
He just turned 23 years old on Sunday. He's hitting a bunch of home runs as he did last year when he hit 45. The thing that jumps out to Albert, to everyone, is he's doubled his walk rate. You and I have been watching baseball for a long time. That does not happen where a young player goes from being, you know, a very aggressive swinger, maybe overswinging, maybe reckless, to having plate discipline. That doesn't happen. And we're seeing it with Junior Caminero. So, yeah, he's also one of those guys, and I agree with you. Shohei, you know, unless he got hurt, he's going to be, again, the MVP in the National League.
Amazing. Buster, thanks so much. It's always a great joy for me to talk to you. Thank you.
Likewise, Tony. I'll talk to you.
This segment with Buster Olney has been brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. We will come back with email and jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. It's Mr. Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of your folks.
Brandon Costello, we always like him.
Yeah, it's lovely.
We like him. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
And good luck navigating Wisconsin Avenue.
The bus lanes. That's a nightmare.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, what would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears. I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. That's the first song in the Sgt. Pepper album, the most important album ever made.
Yes.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and it's sung by the least of the singers of the Beatles, Ringo Starr, who turned 86 years old yesterday and is universally beloved.
Yes.
Everybody loves Ringo.
Everybody loves Ringo.
Thanks to our guests today, Chuck Culpepper and Buster Olney. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review.
Do you think Pete Best is not a fan of Ringo?
He might not be, but everybody else is. From Phil DeStito in Rome, New York, which is in upstate New York. Mr. Tony, cannolis dipped in water? That's sacrilegious. You know how many places and neighborhoods a person could get shot for this? I understand it's an eating contest, but come on. There's only one thing you dip a cannoli in, and that's coffee. That's it. That's the list. Change the rule. From Neil Ayervais, Dr. Spud, yes, Secretariat had a hay bucket, but did he have a vomit bucket? I thought not. Andy Shaner in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Joey Chestnut may be the reigning champion, but the godfather of competitive eating is Kobayashi, who won Nathan's contest six consecutive times from 2001 through 2006. Although one contest he couldn't win was featured on the greatest hour of television ever aired, Man vs. Beast, where he lost to a Kodiak grizzly bear. On the same show, a sumo wrestler took on an orangutan in tug of war, and Carl Lewis raced against a zebra. They don't make TV like they used to. P.S. I'm in Massachusetts for work this week, so I'm hoping to go from Marblehead to Revere. Yeah.
I remember that show.
Oh, gosh.
The notion that you think an eating guy could beat a bear is insane, because if you put
2003,
yeah, if you put 300 hot dogs in front of the bear,
it's gonna eat them all.
They're gone in 4 seconds.
Yeah,
that's what Come on now. Alex Lau, New York City. Not only has Coney Island not removed its rides. Well, then why does Carol tell me this? Not removed its rides, but its most famous ride, a wooden roller coaster named the Cyclone, celebrates its 100th birthday next year.
Like a cyclone.
You must have been just a little boy when it opened. Also, is it just me or is Wilbon turning into a bit of a soccer poet, claiming that watching and reading about soccer helps him understand the world? Settle down, Sparky. You're watching a game, not reading The Economist.
We got an email on this. I didn't print it out. I wasn't sure of the accuracy of it, but apparently there was this Coney Island in Cincinnati, Ohio, that was shut down. It's not the one in New York.
What's that?
It's amusement and water park, just like the one in...
Get out of here.
It's elder fraud.
Get out of here. From Terry Gans in San Carlos, California, who says, I'm having Nathan's tonight. Little known is that the original lyric from MacArthur Park included, Someone left the hot dog in the rain. Jimmy, love the incredulity.
Jimmy Webb, yeah.
That's very funny. Stephen in Belfast in Ireland. Never mind your soccer poets. How about those hot dog poets, huh? George McGough. In Waxhaw, still southeast of Charlotte. I'm definitely not at the level of the participants at Coney Island on the 4th, but back in college, I won our yearly hot dog eating contest at Lehigh University. We had to eat 10 hot dogs in the shortest amount of time. I don't really remember my time, but I did beat 9 other participants. So I got that going for me, which is nice. Yeah. S.K. Flanagan, Master, USNS Amelia Earhart. Really?
Yeah.
He flies the Amelia Earhart plane?
Oh, no, I think it's a ship.
Oh, it's a ship?
Yeah. It's a ship, the U.S. Naval ship.
Why is a ship named after her? Shouldn't planes be named after her?
Well, yeah.
Good day. Been watching a while. Big fan. I was watching the July 6th broadcast, and your first kiss with Amelia Earhart was especially awesome. Since I'm entrusted with operating the ship in support of the United States Navy, keep on keeping on. That's great. That's wonderful. Scott Flanagan, that's really wonderful. Thank you. Bringing up names like Amelia Earhart and Mary Richards really dates you. The problem is I know them also, DG. Yeah, of course. From Mark Powell in Camillus, New York, which is a Syracuse suburb, apparently. I didn't know that. Been listening intently to your talk about the U.S. Adaptive Open, as one of our former Syracuse Crunch Stick Boys is playing in the short stature category. I would like to report that he hit a hole-in-one on the opening day of competition. I'm certain it occurred.
What hole?
I'm reading here. I'm certain it occurred after you recorded the Monday show. Shout out to Ricky Riley on his first career hole-in-one and on the big stage, no less. It doesn't say which number. Thanks for all the laughs and insight into the world of a fellow Hoff-Woff. Been listening since the ESPN days. Can I be the official retired professional hockey strength coach of the show?
Sure, yeah.
Also, we missed you in Rehoboth when we were out there for our annual 1%er week at the beach house. We weren't stalking. We were just walking our dog. From Matt Morim, I hope I pronounced that correctly, Eagan, Minnesota, I wanted to thank you for the decades of entertainment you've given me. I watched PTI from the beginning when I was in college. When I met the woman I'm now related to by marriage 20 years ago, she would nicely sit in the same room with me while I queued up PTI on TiVo. When I would talk about the show over the years, she would ask, is that the two guys that yell at each other? And that would be yes. I now listen to your podcast religiously and never thought a true Minnesota boy would be so intrigued by Washington, D.C. area sports, local utility issues, and age handicap technology problems. What a life you all live. Fast forward to this year. We were planning a trip to your neck of the woods for our kids' lacrosse tournaments in Philadelphia, Delaware, and Maryland. We have 5 days in between tournaments and needed a nice place to have some East Coast fun. I put in my vote for Rehoboth Beach right away. I was asked by 3 lacrosse moms, why them? I replied, Tony Kornheiser has a place there. It must be nice. My wife then had to explain to our friends who you are and why she knows who you are. I was so proud.
Okay.
I'm happy to report we will be staying in Rehoboth Beach next week, and we're all super excited. The lacrosse moms have told everyone that we're staying there because of you. I don't have high hopes in seeing you with our travel schedule, but if you're out walking at night, I'll be the one wearing white. We're planning to hit up Bethesda Bagels before we leave town after our Maryland tournament. I can't wait for the massive eye roll from my wife when I tell her why we're there. Isn't that nice?
Where are we staying in Rehoboth?
That's nice. I don't know.
And if you're in Rehoboth, you got to check out Surf Bagels as well.
Yeah, they have good bagels.
Yeah, very good bagels.
From Steve in Arlington by way of Silver Spring, our good friend Rick Devins has a new endeavor. I don't watch Big Brother, but we will need to appoint an honorary reporter to provide weekly updates so we can follow along. Do you have an idea of this?
He sent a link to a Variety column and said,
is that a show?
Oh, Big Brother? It's a huge show. It's been on for decades, I think. Yeah.
Are you allowed to go from Survivor to Big Brother?
Apparently you are. Okay. Yeah, but it was a big press release. He's going to be a part of that. So
from Cliff Skaggs, please give Dimitrov some good words based on the superb comprehensive tennis he played versus Young Ferry. Gregor had a remarkable performance in a losing effort, probably one of the best matches of his career. It was witnessed by the one whom he patterned his game after, a fellow by the name of Federer, isn't...
Yeah, baby Fed.
Isn't that Dimitrov, isn't that...
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we love Grigor.
Sure about that. Jim Lean, Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Catching up on the pod while recovering from ankle surgery, heard you mention Lititz, Pennsylvania. It's in central Pennsylvania, not far from Lancaster, and it's an awesome small town. It is the home of Aaron's Books, and they are a regular sponsor of Chuck and Roxy's podcast.
How about that?
Okay, that's nice. Chris Cavanaugh in Cincinnati. I'm headed to Louisville this weekend for the Kentucky Open Speed Golf Championships. I wondered if I might see you or Michael or any other bigs there vying for shop credit and bragging rights. I fully expect to see Sansi providing wall-to-wall coverage for the Golf Channel. I'll be sure to give him a hearty lechizerie. If you can tell Lee Sellers to eat it, that would really set the tone for a competitive weekend. For the uninitiated, speed golf combines your golf score with the number of minutes it takes you to play 18 holes. So shooting 90 in an hour and 15 minutes equals a score of 165. Most players use 3 to 5 clubs carried in a junior bag and run from shot to shot. Combatants go off every 4 minutes and each has a spotter who also records their score. Last year on day 2 of the event, Jason Hawkins shot a 1-under in 51 minutes. Wow. I'm hoping not to get stuck in
that's
the bunkers
a lot of fairways.
Like Mr. Tony or suffer a Bipsic type situation and to finish in under 80 minutes each day. I don't know if we'll make the A block of PTI on Monday, but I stand at the ready for 5 good minutes. Isn't that?
That's fascinating,
wow.
Yeah.
From Drew David Andrews in Adelaide, Australia, we can get Washington Nationals games here in Australia, Tony. Eat it, America. I can't get that.
See you later, mate.
Yeah, and from Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado, did you see that Ryerson was subbed in for Norway in the second half? Don't tell me you don't remember him, because he sure as heck fire remembers you. It's a brilliant email. If you're out on your bike tight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
She may get woolly.
Stop.
Young girls that do get woolly.
Shut up, Nuke. Stop saying
it.
It's stress. That's not stress. It's not stress. Stop it.
Nothing goes as planned. Everything will break. And people say goodbye in their own special way. All that you rely on, and all that you can fake. Well, leave you in the morning, but find you in the day. Everything will change. Nothing stays the same. Nobody here's perfect. Oh, but everyone's to blame. Hey, yeah. That you rely on, and all that you can save. Well, leave you in the morning, and find you in. Take.
Everything is dark. It's more than you can take. But you catch a glimpse of sunlight shining, shining down on your face, on your face. Selfish me, I will leave a key for you outside my doorway. Woe is me. What if by land or two by sea? So won't you leave for me a light outside your doorway? On a ladder from there to here, I'll climb. All this clatter between my ears, I find. Does it matter if I can't clear my mind? There's a right and a wrong time. Travel around and follow me, 'cause I will be.